Food, glorious food, hot sausage and mustard, when you're in the mood, blank, blank, look like custard. Sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast, songbirds always eat. Have an egg roll, Mr. Goldstone. Hand me down that can of beans, hand me down that can of beans, hand me down that can of beans, I'm throwing them away. Okay.
Wow.
Well, Tom and Mary are not doing a musical piece at the beginning of this particular game. Now, oh hidden recording person, you can turn it on. Oh, I just wanted to make sure that we had our food-oriented music.
Thank you.
Apologies to Oliver, the boys from Syracuse, Gypsy, and Paint Your Wagon. Great apologies. What I do have to offer you as a beginning is a poem. So when Susan suggested to me and to Pam that we come and be a part of the Words in the Wilderness piece of the program in this rich fair week that followed the Food in the Wilderness theological discussion, I was understandably reminded of the fast food mantra, will you have words with that? So here's my poem to begin this. And probably need, you know, you sort of have these definings of words. Scrod? People know what scrod is?
Yeah.
No.
It's a fish, right?
Yeah. What kind of fish?
It's swimming.
It's like cod. I got scrod.
It's an East Coast fish.
Scrod is an East Coast term for fish of the day. So the menu says scrod, and if they caught cod, you get cod. If they caught halibut, you get halibut. You caught haddock, you get haddock. So scrod is this whatever happened to come out of the pool, like a lot of our writing. But there you go. Here's the poem. For Food in the Wilderness, moving into Words in the Wilderness. Ahoy, mussels and scallops, wild salmon, fish taco, salty scrod, or some chowder, not to mention the mako. For the vegan, fried tempeh or grilled portobello, for the kid crowd, some mac or PB, side of jello. There's an ethnic delight for every gourmet, give your taste buds a tour with the naan of the day. With chipotle, cilantro, with pineapple, juicy bok choy, ravioli, pad thai, squid, or sushi. Ah, the salad of Cobb, the dip avocado, the fajita that sizzles, the steak with bravado. There's a cure for the epicure pies, just like home, taste to unjade the blasé gastronome. For the sweet tooth, sorbet, flan mousse, strudel, or tort, an Alaska that's baked or a cake that is short. But what is the purpose of fast food or organic? To appease dietitian or please opsomanic? Or to lend you panache to lift pen for a verse in villanelle glam or I am that is terse? You are what you eat, that's true most of the time. But at Holden Village, you may be what you rhyme. You may be what you novel, slam, sonnet, recite. So bon appetit. You are what you write. Take a bite.
When did you write that?
Last week.
Oh, wow.
Let's pray. God, let us be what you write on our hearts. Let us watch with urgency your handwriting on the walls of our society. Let us swallow the sweet-mouthed and maybe bitter-bellied scrolls of your holy words, and always let us read with humility the words your finger marks in the dust at the feet of our favorite condemnations and our deepest brokenness. In Jesus' name.
Amen.
Amen.
I've given you a handout. It has a couple of things about it. One of it is that a bunch of them have yellow highlighted pieces. And when we get to that, you will read those highlighted pieces aloud. So if you really hate doing that, switch to someone. But we're a pretty small group, so I don't think you'll object. And I'm going to guess that maybe even all the highlighted ones didn't get passed out.
Right.
There are a few extras, so we may do something else. Second thing about the handout, I love to do handouts because that means that if we don't get everywhere, that I think we're going to go, you're still taking away sort of what I was going to do, so that we have the freedom to be flexible within the program. And the third thing is that certainly for tonight, we're going to write and then speak. And that won't be true tomorrow necessarily. And probably you won't write more than 150 words at the maximum tonight, so it's nothing to actually make you anxious. But it is my my modeling in favor of those who are introspective and introverted. A lot of times what happens in a discussion is that you lose your first response to whatever it was. The movie, the Bible study, the event. If you write first, you always have that first response. Whereas in a conversation, people hook on one to another, and you may well go home and never be able to recapture that. So I leave that for you. I do an awful lot of work with youth and with small groups of adults that a lot of times simply showing the movie and telling everybody to write one sentence on the card when it's over in a moment of silence before you have the discussion, which of course will ensue, gives the quietest person a piece of active engagement and gives everyone the chance of returning home with what that first thought is. So that's why, in fact, I'm going to ask you some things. I'm going to ask you to write them before we talk about them. So I'm going to begin with the very simplest form of writing. That would be a quiz. And, okay, you're not leaving yet. Quick, don't overthink it. Anyone need a pencil? Pen? Pencil pens up here. And bag for returning paper clips up here so we don't create paper clip trash. So you can keep it if you want it, but if you want to get rid of your paper clip, that's a bag up there. So, question number one. What is a favorite book you read before the age of 12? That mattered to you? Peter Pan, Old Yeller, Black Beauty, Kidnapped, Tales of the Fourth Grade Nothing, Ender's Game, Are You My Mother? Whatever. Little Women. Book that mattered to you. Question number one, before the age of 12. Number two. What is a book that you would recommend that you read last year? Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Water for Elephants, Animal Vegetable Miracle, The Higher Power of Lucky, The Time Traveler's Wife, Leaving Church. What's a book that you read in the last calendar year? And not everybody may answer all of these. You may go, whoops, didn't read anything. Or didn't read anything I'd recommend.
So in 2007, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Or within?
Within the last year. Okay. A book you read that you would recommend within the last year. Number three, what's a book on your to-read list? Maybe you already bought it at the bookstore in Holden Village, but whatever. What's a book on your to-read list? Number four, what do you read for escapist pleasure? Mystery, sci-fi, magazines, comics, sports pages, blogs, scores. What do you read for escapist pleasure? And number five, what would be the book that you would write if you could write a book? So you have five questions. You have a favorite book for the age of 12. You have a book you'd recommend from last year, a book on your to-read list, your escapist fiction, and a book that you'd write. What I'd like you to do is pass the piece in this fashion, turn to somebody who's a neighbor, and share one of those answers with that person and why you picked that. It'll take just a minute to do that.
Thank you. To read, want to give back and write. So
So sort of very basic. And when I work with college students, a lot of times they'll say, oh, I haven't read anything for pleasure in a year, you know? I haven't read anything that I enjoy. And what it does is starves your own writing. Some people will also say, I'll be influenced. I would be too influenced by something. And in fact, Stephen King, in his book on writing, says that in the months that he writes, he doesn't read anything else, but he does nothing but glut on books in the months between the books that he writes, so that he is hearing the other voices. So thank you for that bit of self-introduction to one another. Second thing I'm going to invite you to do is also writing a recipe. Everybody got a recipe card. We are still on rich fare. So what I am going to invite you to do, and I'm only going to give you, about 3 minutes to do it, so you can't be polished, you can't be wonderful, is I want you to write a recipe for a meaningful day. Now, that could be a meaningful day at Holden, it could be a meaningful day at the place you normally are. It could be a meaningful Christmas because the last three have been broken by family disputes. It could be a meaningful vacation day because you know that that's coming on. It could be a meaningful Sunday when you know you've got the church council meeting. It could be, but a meaningful day, and write it as a recipe using the ingredients, using the kind of proportions that we use. You know, there's a cup of this and a pinch of this. And then what would you do to cook or gel or chill to make your meaningful day? So I'm asking you to kind of twist your mind around to write about a meaningful day in recipe format. When we do that, I'll invite anyone who wants to share to share. It's not something that you'll have to do. another minute or so. All right. Hopefully that wasn't quite enough time. On the hope of just writing something that isn't very polished, but who'd be willing to share what you wrote?
Sure.
Rick first, and then
Tim. A meaningful day. Ingredients: a ray of sunshine, a drop of rain, a waft of breeze, a block of granite, a basket of pine needles, a pillowcase of seashells, a bucket of seaweed, a cluster of hay. Mixed gently and served during the month of August along the coast of Maine, serves as many as are present.
Thank you. Wow.
Yeah.
You done this before?
I should have gone first. Okay. One really good cup of coffee. 1/2 hour of reading and quiet time. 1/2 hour mindlessly reading news on the internet. 1 more good cup of coffee with a friend. 2.5 hours yard work. 2 cups fresh apple carrot juice blend shared with Stacy, that's my wife. 1 shower. 15 minutes planning dinner spread over the whole day. 1 hour cooking dinner. 1 hour at table with Stacy and our girls. 3 hours family time, blending homework, entertainment, reading, 6 to 7 hours sleep.
Thank you. Somebody else.
A meaningful day. Combine 1 mother and 1 daughter. Mix in car for 1 hour. Set in retreat center. Combine 20 hours of conversation. Add an abundance of sharing, several truthful moments sprinkled with fear and understanding. Take out of retreat serves 2 women in a new relationship.
Thank you. People have written a recipe for a meaningful day, and some of them are sharing. Somebody else?
I'm going to do one as an engineer, and it's more for me, a recipe for a board meeting, and being a non-cook, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
A large amount of patience, a measure of logic, a bountiful amount of listening, followed by a small amount of talking.
Amen. Thank you. Anyone else?
Read mine.
Loud.
Loud?
Yes, please.
Well, it's really only for you. One pound of morning grouchiness. 2 cups of tea served by my dearest with a slice of care on a slice of love with honey on it. 3 cups of sunshine, and at bedtime study the moon, the man in the moon. And what have I written there? Something else.
Pretty good.
Oh, that was regular chores that came in between, that's right. And they are to be consumed in the order as written.
Thank you. Anyone else? Right. Thank you. That's sort of probably one of the most simplistic. Did I see a hand waving there? No. Forms of writing to write a recipe, and certainly one that sort of shakes one out of what you think of in terms of writing. But there are some things about writing. Am I moving out of my light again into the shadow? Things about writing that are those kind of list-making recipe things that I want to share as sort of opening words about writing, as we think about that as a time that Pam and I and Tracy and Sarah are sharing with those who have gathered to think about that as something you do. So a few things, one of them. You all write. Whether it's a recipe or email with courtesy or the list of things you're going to do for the day or the note to the child who comes in after you go to bed or the postcard sent to a mother far away. We all write. First thing is that there is no hierarchy in writing. And one of the things that happens with writing is that people feel that there is, well, I mean, you can quilt and not sell your quilts. You can scrapbook and not sell your scrapbooks. You can watercolor for your friends, but if you write, it's not really writing unless you publish. Whereas to be an amateur, to be a lover of writing, is to be one for whom writing, whether it ends up in a bound book or whether it ends up on the refrigerator of a grandparent, is a gift. So before we begin to think about anything else, it is to say, you know, the weekly sermon, the devotion for the couples group, the comic book pages drawn out for a kid, they're all writing, and there's no sort of this is a better and this is a not so well. So first point. I was actually going to say, I was going to add journaling and blogging and fanfic. People know what fanfic is? Fanfic is a, nobody in this room has ever written or read fanfic. It's wonderful fun, right? If you want to actually be read by many people, more people than have ever read all of my books, you should write fanfic. I'll tell you what fanfic is. It's on the internet, and it's people who write stories about other people's characters. So there is fanfic about Harry Potter. And people who want to write stories about the characters found in the Harry Potter novels write fanfic, and other people who love the Harry Potter novels go into their internet and call it up and read the short stories. People write short stories about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. People still write fanfic short stories about Star Trek characters. It's a form of one of the most popular fictional sort of a thing. And I have a friend who writes a fanfic. She lives in Tokyo. And she regularly gets, when she does a new episode, as many as 30,000 hits. This is a 29-year-old girl who has never made a penny from her writing, but every month will put in a fanfic story in one or another of these genres. Never created her own characters, but writes. So, but the point is, and I can't imagine doing using somebody else's characters, and we're going to listen to Pam talk about creating our own characters, but it is a form of writing, and people enjoy reading it, which is what matters. Yeah.
Good question. How do you spell it?
Fan fiction?
Fan fiction would be what it's a short from, so it's F-A-N, fan, as I'm a fan of... Okay. Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
So you are?
And fiction, no. Well, I mean, I haven't seen it.
Okay,
so
is it one word then?
It is one word, F-A-N-F-I-C. Right. So if you go into the...
how do you find it?
Google fanfic on a computer. And it will pop up sites, and then they'll ask you what show you want or what book you want. Treasure Island fanfic, stories about Long John Silver.
Well, there's been some novels published.
like that, right? Was it Ahab's wife, or what was it? There was one on Gone with the Wind.
Yep, The Wind on Gone.
Yeah.
The Wind on Gone. There are right, but in it, the point is, and you know, there are probably more people who read blogs, political blogs, than read columns in newspapers. Although it would seem that writing a column for a newspaper and getting money would be a better form of writing, but it's not.
I know you're still on point one, mm-hmm. but blogs. I think I have responded once or twice on blogs, but I have a fear about going to a blog. I have blog phobia.
That you get a virus?
What?
That you'll get a virus from
going there? No, it's more of exposure. It's vulnerable, it's concern about, you know, I don't have any control over it. It's out there, you know.
And it's somebody's opinion and you have no, very few ways of checking it.
Right.
But it's a form of creative writing. Think of it as fiction. Think of it as not, I mean, yeah.
So I could create a character, right? And,
sure.
And, yeah. And just adopt it.
You could?
This sounds like it could get weird real quick.
It could get weird real quick. Second point that's in this sort of basic recipe. In terms of writing that we think of in terms of writing projects, and I think a lot of you probably come thinking that, you know, you want to write something. There are kind of two different sets of people in general, and there are those people who have something that they really want to write about. I have a project, I have a story, I have a family, a saga, I have something I want to write. And then there are people who are writers, who want to write all the time, who will write a poem this week and want to write a story next week, and what they are is they're passionate about writing. Just to understand that those are two very different sort of dynamics in terms of how you get them done. So if you have a project, this is the writing thing you want to do. You seek help and you seek sort of creation in a different kind of way than if you're really looking for somebody actually to ask you, would you write an article for me on such and such? And you go, yes, I'm a writer and I can't wait to do that. Third point, the ability to discipline a person, self, to be a writer is really all about discernment. And I struggled with whether there was a way to give people advice on how to become a writer or not, and decided that there absolutely wasn't any way to do that, but that there were areas to think about discernment when one is thinking about one's own writing. And the first one has to do with place, knowing whether you are the kind of person who needs to write in a place that is quiet and removed and always the same, the place I go to write. Or if you're the kind of person who can write in the bus and in a coffee shop, and the more things are spinning around you, actually the more it helps you focus. Second, what about time? There are people who, if they're going to successfully write, need to write the same time every day. They need to get up at 5 in the morning and write from 5 to 6, and then the rest of the family gets up, and they've made that commitment to themselves. There are other people that, you know, could say, I give a day a month to my writing. I don't need to do it every day, but in the course of a month, I want to give 8 hours and I want to write. Different kind of discipline, different kind of discernment. Then there are people in terms of company. Some people need, and you need to learn that about yourself, to write what they write alone before they share it with somebody else. A lot of other people like to find collaborative writing groups so that while they're writing a project, they can bring to a group of people who are also writing one or two pages and get immediate feedback and work on it so they're, you know, sort of having that kind of creativity. Piece of discernment is to learn which one of those two patterns is yours. And inspiration. Some people, you know, I handed out this afternoon, and you can take one tonight, a list of people who write about writing resources. Some people love those things. Some people love to take creative writing courses. and have people give them writing prompts that get them going, other people really need to just do their own thing. The discernment is learning which of those you are. So the most important things in terms of being able to create your own writing discipline is to ask those kinds of questions of yourself. If you write in the morning, and the only time you let yourself write is between midnight and 1 o'clock in the morning, when it's the dregs of your time, you'll never get anything written. And discovering that is also should be something that you can maintain for a period of time. Sarah, who read yesterday afternoon, read from her novel, talked about, here's another one, NaNoWriMo. People know about NaNoWriMo. NaNoWriMo. And it means National Novel Writing Month, and that is November. And there's an organization that if you'd like to write a novel in a month, 50,000-word novel, will help and support you in the month of November and give you the encouragement to write a novel in a month. And that's how Sarah wrote her novel the first time she wrote it, and then she went back and revised it. That's the kind of discernment that you say, I really need thousands of people across the country the same month doing the same thing I'm doing. I'm going to write this novel, and, you know, other people, you know, I really need to take the next 10 years, a little bit of time, doing this. So knowing about yourself is an important thing. Usually what jumpstarts writer's block is taking one of those things, the place, the time, the company, the inspiration, and the ability to maintain, and twisting it around. So that, for example, I took everything except the cross in the center of our fire circle and moved it slightly to the end that we would see all those things differently. I'll put them back. But that's sort of what you need to do if you're in the midst of writing block, is to figure out one of those things that you do in terms of writing and move it and shift it and twist it. And then finally, the ultimate purpose of public writing is to share it with one or with many people. But that can be done in many ways. It begins with understanding the difference between private writing and public writing. Obviously, private writing is journaling, is the early drafts of things, and public writing is the kind of writing to share. There are a wide range of ways you can share those things. You can share them by publishing them. You can share poems by signing up for an open mic or a coffee house and reading them. You can share them with family members. You can share them with friends. You can write an oral history of your church and share it with the members of the church and people who have left the church and moved away to other places. But the ultimate, you know, that focus that we started with, do you read, ends up, you do write to the end that other people read. There's not a lot of value in actually writing just for yourself once it becomes the public writing. Although many people will just do private writing, will just do journaling. Thoughts and reflections of yours on any of that?
I mean, my experience of writing, I resonate when we talk about place, in terms of finding the right place, at home, it's creating the right, you know, space, which may be tidying, rearranging. Or coffee shops, you know, finding, you know, a place that you connect with for whatever reason. I found that to be very helpful. Very helpful.
And which do you do more often?
Oh, it depends. It depends. More often?
Mm-hmm.
More often if I'm doing smaller writing projects, it's at home. And then that usually has to do with having to rearrange my space or put myself in when the weather's good, where I have sunshine and light. Yeah. And I can look out into the garden or be on the front porch and look out and see people kind of trying to create the, I kind of liken it to a dog, you know, as they kind of go around and their tail are kind of settling in, they're kind of creating, you know, how they kind of go around, and then they kind of lay down and settle in.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of just sort of, you know, kind of preparing, yeah, kind of preparing the space.
One thing that's interesting to me is I've heard people say, you know, one of the best ways to be a writer is to write. Write every day, just always be writing. Write, write, write.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard other people say that whole just write is really a bad idea. If you don't have something to write, don't write. I mean, is that just an intensely personal thing, where for some people the way to do it is to just sit down and write, and other people need to wait until the inspiration comes, or what? I mean, those are extremely opposite pieces of advice from knowing people.
The suggestions about writing every day come from some sort of two directions. One of them would be that if you journal every day, if you write every day, you will eventually create a body of material from which you can take inspiration. And the other one, the most noted writer would be Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way, who would suggest writing 3 pages a day to get the junk off your mind. You know, the irritations, the frustrations with life, the junk, so that you actually write 3 pages a day just to get rid of all the crap. So that those are two sort of reasons around writing every day. The people who suggest that you wait would, you know, sort of are much more project-based. So you're sort of waiting for an inspiration and waiting for a project. You know, it really is very personal. Pam, do you have a response to that?
Well, yeah, I think inspiration is a wonderful thing when it comes. And if you're ready for it, then you can make use of it. But I think at the same time, you have to practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like playing the piano or learning a language, so that when you get to a place where people are speaking Italian or French, then you practice so that you can follow the conversation. I think it's the same thing with writing. But I was never able to write every day. You know, I have kids at home. I get kids to school, you know, there's laundry to do. And so I decided that I could write once a week. And I would have to actually leave the house to do it, because everything that was in the house would be calling to me. The laundry, the dishwasher would have to be empty, the stairs that were calling out to be vacuumed, you know. I would take my computer and my books and I would leave. I would go to a library, someplace that was quiet, where I had to have at least a few hours of uninterrupted time. And I found that the important thing was, a lot of times when I drove down to the library, I wouldn't have a clue what I was going to write when I got there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid that when I, you know, turned on my computer and I had this blank piece of paper, whatever it was, that I would, you know, draw a blank, I would sit there. That usually didn't happen. I found that once I kept the commitment to going once a week, there was another part of my brain that was storing up things for me,
right,
waiting for that time when they can come out. And if it could trust that I was going to keep my side of the bargain, and have that time, even if it was 3 or 4 hours one day a week, then by the time I got there, it would start to come out what it was that...
Because you would have put yourself there. Thank you.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's absolutely true. Those commitments with yourself, even more than bargain, you know, I mean, are important. When you let them go, then you really get in trouble. I mean, people say, you know, I was writing last winter and I haven't done it for 3 months. It's really hard to get out of that. So the more regular and the more, I know an awful lot of people who will actually mark writing dates in their calendar. I know people that meet others at coffee shops and they both just sit there and write their own stuff and never share it. But they have made the commitment to one another to be such and such a place for such and such a period of time. Is that artificial? Sure, it's artificial, but it gets you doing it. It gets you doing the practicing and the exercising and the ways of doing it.
I don't see what's artificial about it. I mean, I think it's practical. It's one way to do it. Pam, I don't know. I write a sermon. That's every every week, and I do it the same way that you just described it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read the scriptures, and then for a week I'm living with life, and I'm just letting life speak to me. And then I get up at 5:30 on Sunday morning, and I write it in.
Ooh, wow.
There's only one time that I have written a sermon in the last several years. Before that, and that was the day before my wife had a liver transplant operation on July 19th. I had an idea that she might get a liver the next day, so I wrote it on Saturday.
Wow.
And emailed it to somebody in the church to deliver it.
Wow.
But that kind of ongoing thinking and the ideas in it, and then it pretty much writes itself.
Yeah, tomorrow we're going to talk about the power of the unconscious.
Because there's a lot that actually happens brain-wise in the inspiration. And actually, Pam's going to talk about that. So that last question that I asked in the initial quiz, what are the things that you would like to write that are in the room? Who answered that one?
Yeah. I'd like to write a funny novel about the business world.
A funny novel about the business world. Somebody else. Yeah.
Family stories.
Family stories.
Embellished genealogy, if you will. You may or may not know the facts, but you could write as if you knew the characters.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I have some professional writing that I want to do, but I also am also interested in doing some essays, and as we talked about earlier, playing around with the concept of enough, and doing something with, and at some point doing something with all the papers I have from my dad and his ministry.
So professional writing, something about enough, and your dad.
Yeah.
Somebody else.
Yeah.
I wanted to write about my dad a little bit. He was a temporary orphan in World War II, and it just so intrigued me, just from who he was and things that I've experienced with him, that they're just things I'd love to bring out.
Poetry.
Things you'd like to write?
Well, a long time ago, shortly after World War II, I guess, in the mid-50s, there was a novel, well, actually it wasn't a novel, it was a story written called You're Stepping on My Cloak and Dagger. If you haven't read it, it's absolutely fascinating. Very funny.
Uh-huh.
And what I wrote for number five was, my life as a CIA psychologist, which is what I did.
Uh-huh.
And but I would really like to write, as you said, a funny novel about life in the CIA.
Ooh.
Wow.
That would probably
sell. We'll buy it.
I would love to write a play.
You'd like to write a play.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
What?
The play.
Oh, play. Oh. Mm.
I also would like to write what I call ordinary poetry, Billy Collins reflecting on the simple things. But I also really wish that I could write some essays.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sadness that I think there's a big gap between what I think in my heart and what my kids think. And I really would love, there are books of, where you write to your daughters or whatever. I really would love to try to write sort of unfettered by all the nuances of the relationship, but still to them, so to speak. And sometimes my best writing is when I'm writing a letter to someone.
To someone, whether you ever send it or not.
It's really interesting, isn't it, that the whole Marilyn Robinson's Gilead, that sort of thought experiment of what it's like. And in her case, you know, she wrote it as a male pattern. You read Gilead?
Gilead.
She writes that, you know, inhabits a male...
A male pastor
thinking of a male pastor writing in 1956, a congregational pastor writing in Gilead, Iowa, to a son he's had late in life. He's in his 70s. He's had this son who's young. He won't be alive to relate to his son as, you know, adult. And he's trying to give an account of his life to the son, you know, for when he's gone. Yeah, I would really commend that. And then she's got the recent book, Home, that's just been published too, which is another set of characters in that book.
Well, I was even thinking this wonderful thing that Dorothy, who's such a good writer, did with her reflections on stations in
home.
Uh-huh. And I started thinking, but what about the stations in one's life where you really do learn and you meditate and they shape you and there's ritual and all, you know, it just seems like that might be another format for the same.
And I want to say a word about one of Dorothy's gifts too. Many of you may know this, but not only the writing, but she's just an incredible editor. And you know, it's for me, what a gift it's been for others of us who worked with her to write something and have her, you know, engage it and come back, you know, with suggestions, but also find ways to economize words and
I do that.
That's having someone like that, not just your professional editor that you're publishing with, but someone who can give you that kind of
which feedback. Is a very particular kind of gift, which is a very particular kind of writing, which is to shape the writing of someone else.
Yeah.
Let's take a moment. I poured through writers to come up with these pithy quotes. And there are writers all over the world complaining that I didn't choose their pithy remarks. And Emily Dickinson is picketing for plagiarism the sainthood possibilities of Mother Teresa. But nevertheless, wanted to read these to the end that they heard out loud. And I'm just going to invite us to go around and read them, although I highlighted some. I don't think we've got enough people to do that. So Tim, we'll start in the opening row. I started to write
because I was too shy to talk and too lonely not to send messages.
Maybe we will go. Who has the next one?
Should I just start?
Yeah.
Okay, in vote order?
Yeah.
Write about what makes you different.
There are days when I think, how did I get into this writing? But here I am, and the truth is, I wanted it. I own my own mind. My mouth and the words I say with it are mine, and no one can take that away.
Writers get obsessed with a project and lock the doors and sit and work at it like animals in a leg trap, trying to chew through the leg, which is not a good strategy. My advice is to get out of the house and take a walk. It will improve your circulation and your brain will remember the basics of good writing. Cut to the chase, cut the introductions, cut the agonized introspection. When in doubt, write something that is fun. Read your work out loud. It's the automatic bullshit detector.
We write about what we don't know about what we know.
I am a very thin pencil in the hand of a god who is writing a love letter to the world.
Tracy, moving on to Stephen King.
Write with the door closed. Rewrite with the door open. Your stuff starts out being just for you, in other words, but then it goes out. Once you know what the story is and get it right as you can anyway, it belongs to anyone who wants to read it or criticize it.
Everyone who has survived childhood has enough material to write about for the rest of their lives.
Next. The Real Torture with Aragon.
Is that my turn then?
Yep.
The Real Torture with Aragon came in the editing. I described that editing is real. I discovered that editing is really another word for someone ruthlessly tearing apart your work with a big smile. All the while telling you that it'll make the book so much better. How about that? And it did, though it felt like splinters of hot bamboo being driven into your tender eyeballs.
Why I encourage really, really awful first drafts is because this is how every single real writer I know writes. Short assignment by short assignment. Shitty.
It is out of the month. Yeah.
First draft by a shitty first draft.
That sounds like me.
Success comes down to one quality, discipline. Write when you're happy, write when you're sad, write when you're dead tired, write when it's a beautiful day outside and you want to go running. Eventually, it will add up.
I am living proof that you don't have to have lots of ideas to be a writer. Some of you may have lots of ideas, too many maybe. I wish I had your problem. I get very few ideas, but when I get one, I don't let it slip away.
All right, we'll come around.
Okay. Quite often, a difficult, painful, or frustrating day can be redeemed by writing about it. By writing, we can claim what we have lived. Then writing can become life-saving for us and sometimes for others too.
A true piece of writing is a dangerous thing. It can change your life.
The poet's goal is to light up the sky.
There's a piece from The Wind and the Willows by Kenneth Graham. Who's next? Who would like to read that? One of them.
It's quite a long time since you did any poetry, Mole remarked. You might have a try at it this evening instead of, well, brooding over things so much. I have an idea that you'll feel a lot better when you've gotten something jotted down, even if it's only just the rhymes. The rat pushed the paper away from him wearily, but the discreet mole took occasion to leave the room, and when he peeped in again sometime later, the rat was absorbed and deaf to the world, alternately scribbling and sucking the top of his pencil. It is true that he sucked a good deal more than he scribbled, but it was a joy to the mole to know that the cure had at least begun.
Thank you. And the last one, this introduction, the poem, Introduction to Poetry by Billy Collins, is around the appreciation of poetry or the way we read it. And I think this week goes out to Fred Niemeyer. Who has this week done all the things that Billy Collins suggests, I think actually one after another, and has not done any of the things that he deplores. Have somebody who'd like to volunteer to read this poem all together, particularly those of you who haven't read. Yeah.
The Apple That Astonished Paris.
That's the name of the book that it's in.
Oh, okay. I asked them to take a poem and hold it up to the light like a color slide, or press an ear against its hive. I say, drop a mouse into a poem and watch him probe his way out, or walk inside the poem's room and feel the walls for a light switch. I want them to water ski across the surface of a poem waving at the author's name on the shore. But all they want to do is tie the poem to a chair with rope and torture a confession out of it. They begin beating it with a hose to find out what it really means. Wanted to end with that one in terms of the readings, because if I were to say anything sort of to end in sort of this introduction piece for writing, it's the preciousness of what you write. And although we may have to have critics, like Christopher Paolini, do people know who he is? Christopher Paolini is the 15-year-old boy who wrote Aragon and the two succeeding novels. And his parents self-published the first one, and then it's become a worldwide phenomenon. But anyway, it was a 15-year-old writer. So if you sort of take that into context, it needed a lot of editing. It probably needed a lot more editing after it was published, in fact, than is not nearly as well done as his later books. But the given that we put ourselves out there for editing, one of the more important things is to recognize how precious and how actually independent of who we are a piece of our writing is. It's not us. It's a piece of writing. And it's something of value, and it's something of grace. And it's something that when you give to somebody else, it is a blessing. Something when you give to yourself or to your family in an annotated genealogy or to the world in a humorous CIA novel, or if you write, you know, what is enough, it's a gift. You can see that I actually was hoping that we might have a chance to write a prayer. So you go home with the assignment on the back of your piece of paper. There are all these little four-word groups. The invitation is to find one, to find four words. In fact, you don't even have to find them in a group if you don't want to. To find four words and write a prayer that uses those words as the prompt, as the beginning. To write a prayer, and I'll invite as devotion tomorrow afternoon when we get together for the workshop, anyone who has done that and would like to share their prayer, to do that as a way in which we open. But I thank you very much for your attention today.
Thank you.
Thank you.